So we're on another episode of Inside Out. We have a special guest today from Full Armor, Danny Kim.
Yep.
Full Armor sounds like a security kind of thing. What do you guys do?
Well, that was our history. Mm-hmm. We're the best way to describe our company is we're a 20-year-old startup. We've been around forever. I actually started the company with my roommates in college.
All right.
And our whole first product was around security. We actually was one of the first inventors of altruistic viruses that actually encrypted and locked the hard drive.
Nice.
And that's kind of where the genesis of the name came from, where, you know, it was all around security. Mm-hmm. We encrypted files, directories, hard drives, and so on. And back in, I think, 96 was when we got our first break with Walmart, a large customer.
Uh-huh.
They said, hey, we love your security product, but we've got these problems with these demo PCs on the shop floor. So if you go into Walmart or any of these stores, you see these demo PCs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they said during the Christmas breaks or summers, these high school kids would come in and they'd hack into it. They'd put obscenities on it or just like corrupt it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they found out that a customer coming into a Walmart store is 40% more likely to buy a PC if it's running than if it was actually broken. It's kind of like test driving a car.
Of course.
Right?
Of
you
course.
Go into a test drive a car, and if the car doesn't work, you're probably not going to buy the car. So they said, hey, can you create a software product that will keep our PCs up and running?
Mm.
Was really their mantra. So we created this product. Again, it was called Full Armor at the time. And we used the policy infrastructure of Windows NT called System Policies.
Okay.
And we used that to lock down the PC so that it can still work, but no one can get access to it and break it in or destroy it. And that was the genesis of a lot of our product lines from there, where we derived the technology of locking down the PC, securing the endpoint, using base technology that Microsoft had built into the OS.
Cool. Now, just to step back a little bit, you mentioned you started, so you were hacking in college, you and
your
friends.
We were hackers, yeah.
You weren't always altruistic, but you figured out how systems work.
Exactly.
Right? Yes. So you figured out how to hack into systems. And
a lot of times you have to think like
of course.
The people you're going to try to avoid.
Absolutely.
In order to be able to create solutions around them.
Cool. So, you know, before NT, it was, did you play around with Windows 3.1? And which
first,
didn't have a security model, by
our
the
first
way.
Product was DOS 1.0, believe it or not.
Man.
And now you're dating me a bit.
Mm.
But that was where we first started, trying to secure the DOS environment. And actually, our first customers was, you know, Wall Street banks like Citigroup, and
because
they wanted to secure their DOS environments.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, clearly as Windows has evolved, it's gotten more secure.
Yes.
But you guys spend a lot of time actually working with the product teams who write code.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you help them find flaws in their code at that level?
Actually, we get feedback from both the product teams. We've gotten now such a great reputation with working with different product groups at Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
that they now call us and say, hey, we've got these, you know, interesting areas that needs to be filled quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Can you come in and fill them? And because our track record has been going to the large enterprises, because a lot of our customers are the Fortune 100s of the world,
mm-hmm.
and they've been telling us, here's some holes that we'd like you to fill, and we've been able to react quickly and fill those holes for them. And so once we do that, we go back to the product teams, and here's the things that we've done, and we'd like to help both, you know, build on top of what you're going to be building,
mm-hmm.
And also help you, you know, round out your product lines. So that's worked both ways, both for the customer and for the Microsoft.
Excellent. Now, I guess you work at both an architectural level and then down at an engineering level.
Yep. So we've done a couple projects with Microsoft where we've done actually sat down with the developers and
mm-hmm.
actually coded the operating system and coded some of the Windows Mobile infrastructure and whatnot. So we get down to the mucky mucks as well, and we love it. Actually, myself, you know, becoming more the manager of managers, because, you know, after a while, although we only have 17, 20 people at any time, it's still, I miss the coding at times. And so I love getting down into the mucky mucks and coding once in a while, because it just kind of keeps you on edge.
Absolutely.
But then we also go down and where our value point is, we can bridge the gap between that low-level series of problems and solving and grabbing solutions to the business problems that companies are having.
Mm-hmm.
So the large enterprises and the government agencies who say, you know what, I've got these issues with with these type of business problems and security problems, mm-hmm. how do we bridge that gap? And so we can actually play the role of saying, we know that where the technology is and how it works, we know your business problem, and we can actually create a solution for you.
Excellent. I mean, that brings up a good point, because security just isn't about code, right? Yeah, you're going to have buffer overruns if you aren't paying attention when you're actually implementing something in C++ or any right. other native type language.
Exactly.
But, you know, like you mentioned, there's also business problems and strategic issues that you yep. have to think about that are larger.
One, there's also problems that come up that no one's even thought of solutions for because the technology is moving so quickly. You know, virtualization actually is one of those things where our business model is very interesting because we actually develop software and technologies mm-hmm. and we license and sell it off. And we've done that over the last 20 years. We've done that four or five times now. Mm. And so what we do is we find opportunities where here's a huge business problem, virtualization being one of those things where it just took off like crazy. And
sure.
so obviously with virtualization, before in a data center, you had bring up 100 servers would take somebody several weeks, right? Mm. Now the idea of bringing up 10,000 virtual servers, is literally within hours. That causes a lot of other problems. How do you automate it? How do you secure it? How do you, productize it? How do you make sure that everything gets coordinated? Mm-hmm. And so we've created technologies and solutions to problems that didn't actually exist before, but taking the same technology underneath and combining it together mm-hmm. in unique ways, we create a solution. So again, back in virtualization, virtualization of applications like Softgrids.
Absolutely.
Was one of the things that we saw a big, huge opportunity. And we have a technology that allows you to, what it can do is you can actually stream an application to a desktop without having to actually install it. Mm. Well, now imagine doing that for 1,000 desktops. How do you actually secure the application and not the endpoint? Mm. And so we have a technology called GP Anywhere, or Group Policy, which is the next genesis of system policy. So with Windows 2000 and Active Directory, this technology called Group Policy came out that allows you to completely lock down an endpoint or an application. Mm-hmm. We've taken that, we've virtualized it and said, okay, here's an application streaming down. We're going to fling that group policy, a mm-hmm. virtual group policy, to the application with it. Mm-hmm. And now you've locked down that application, but you leave the endpoint alone.
Nice, man. So let's talk a little bit more about this. Keep on going.
Okay.
This GP stuff is pretty interesting.
So group policy is a technology that, when Windows 2000 first came out, there was like, 685 settings or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And over the years, it's grown. With XP, it was like 1,200 settings. And with Vista, now there's 2,500 settings. 80 to 90% of those settings are all security related. Mm. So everything from Kerberos, IPsec, locking down of the desktop, endpoint, controlling everything. Mm-hmm. The problem is in order for you to use group policy, mm-hmm. it takes a PhD in group policy. It's just very difficult to do. Mm. And so one of the things that we've done is be able to not only simplify it, but make it more accessible. So we've taken group policy in AD and we said, hey, this is something that everybody is going to want to use, not just for the machines that are connected to Active Directory, mm-hmm. Which is where group policy works in, but hey, what if we virtualized it? We took it and virtualized it so we can take it out of AD, and now we can fling it to your mom's PC, right?
Nice.
At home, or to your Windows mobile phone, or to a virtualized application. So we're crossing the boundaries of what policy can be applied to.
Interesting.
Based on what the standard group policy mechanism was designed to do.
Great. It's like software plus services group policy.
Actually, excellent. I
like
love that because the term we're trying to coin here is it's actually security as a service.
Sure.
Right? Security, just like software being delivered as a service, mm-hmm. when you're delivering software so dynamically as a service to anybody, anywhere, mm-hmm. you also need to follow that in with security as a service.
Absolutely.
You need to deliver the security on demand as well. And so what we've done is taken this base technology called group policy, which is the de facto standard in most corporations, mm-hmm. and said, okay, you know this technology, you understand it, it has a lot of value. Well, we can take it and we can deliver it to all your applications and all your endpoints, whether it's on AD or not.
Outstanding. So in other words, whether or not it's inside the enterprise or out in the real world.
Exactly.
Not the enterprises in the real world.
Well, even the enterprises.
Moms and dads.
Yeah. Yeah, even the enterprises, branch offices that aren't joined to the domain. You've got a lot of our customers are mobile sales forces. Mm-hmm. If you're a good salesperson, you actually shouldn't be in the office.
Sure.
Right? And so what they do is the salesperson will get their laptop connected when they're the first day they're on the job, mm-hmm. get all their software and security policy, and then they may not be in the office for months.
Yeah.
Because they're outside, you know, knocking on doors, and, you know, most of the times they connect is through a Starbucks connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll VPN in, and they'll almost never get a policy. And so those are scenarios where GP Anywhere could take that same group policy in the corporate environment, and if the salesperson connects to Starbucks, we can push it down through that channel.
Outstanding. Or if they're, like you're saying, they're using a mobile device like a phone,
yep.
smartphone, they can have the same experience.
Exactly.
Very cool. So what other types of things do you guys do? I mean, you work with the Windows team a lot, obviously, because
yes.
there's a large surface area for attack.
Yep.
What about other groups, like Internet Explorer or, you know?
There's a lot of groups that we work with. A management group, the System Center folks,
okay.
we have a lot of integration with,
certainly.
Obviously, because if you're looking at managing hundreds or thousands or now, you know, millions of endpoints, desktops or servers,
mm-hmm.
you gotta have management. You gotta have monitoring. And so a lot of the technologies we've created interface and integrate with those with System Center line of products
mm-hmm.
so that we can do the effective management and monitoring of those devices.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about your partnership with Microsoft.
And
we,
sure.
On Inside Out, we talk to partners. I mean, that's really what we do on this show.
Yeah.
And there's a couple questions I have. The first one I always like to ask is, why are you so passionate about working with Microsoft? And the second one is how have you developed this partnership over time to
yep.
be to the extent where you actually spend time with product teams?
Yep. So we became a global ISV about 10 years ago.
Okay.
That was when we were first working Windows 2000. We approached the Windows 2000 group policy team. and we said, hey, we've been doing this stuff with NT system policy. Is there any opportunity with Windows 2000 and this new group policy Active Directory thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're thinking, oh, we'll extend it, we'll do add-on products. And I remember the program manager at the time, Michael Dennis, he said, you know what? We have some holes in group policy. You know, mm-hmm. we've that we weren't able to fill. You know, we didn't have reporting, backup restore, and all this stuff. Can you guys help us with that? And it was like, all right, you're Microsoft. Yeah, we'd love to help you. So we
okay.
came back 4 weeks later and had a solution. And he was like blown away. He's like, this is amazing. We'll work with you.
Cool.
And from that point on, we've been able to start working with the product teams and creating solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And what we quickly found out is there's a huge, and obviously the other partners in the Microsoft ecosystem know this, but it's a huge ecosystem of partners mm-hmm. that love to work together.
Okay.
And so, recently, actually, about a little over a year ago, we got an office in the MPSC, Microsoft Partner Solutions Center. And there's a ton of partners who have offices. And for me, the first day I got in there, it was like I was a kid in a candy store.
Hmm.
It's like, wow, which partner do I work with today?
Nice.
Walk across the hall and tell them all the stuff we've done with Microsoft and the product teams. And they're like, oh my gosh, where have you been?
Mm-hmm.
I think in a little over a year, we had 4 signed deals with 3 different large Microsoft partners.
Wow.
And so it was just fun. And for me, we were already working with the other partners there as well. So we've signed licensing deals. We've actually done asset sales to some of the partners. And these are major public companies that play very well in the Microsoft ecosystem. So for us, it's an ideal world where we have the technical and the reputation within Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to create products that are complementary, and then being able to partner with Microsoft partners to get that out to the market.
Cool. So, I mean, let's talk about partnering with Microsoft.
Sure.
Microsoft is a company of engineers, first and foremost.
Yes.
And engineers really aren't very good at dealing with salespeople and marketing types. Not that they aren't exceptionally important to any business.
Right.
But engineers and marketing typically don't speak the same language.
Agree.
So let's talk a little bit about how you, I mean, clearly you're an engineer, so it was kind of...
Is that clear? Yes.
Well, you were a hacker.
Yes.
Come on, man.
Yeah. I would say the one thing that surprised us that we had to learn about Microsoft
mm-hmm.
Was one, Microsoft isn't one company. Every product group, we have to prove ourselves over and over again. That's one of the number one mistakes a lot of partners make. They approach Microsoft and say, oh, Microsoft is this one company.
Mm.
You know, if you know we're going to do business or not based on that one interface we have with them. And that's not true.
Okay.
Number two is, you're right, Microsoft is an engineering company. That's something that not many partners really realize. Mm-hmm. Because what they'll do is they'll try to send in a salesperson or a marketing person to talk to the engineers. And I could tell you right offhand, engineers at Microsoft or any company mm-hmm. hate sitting down with the marketing folks.
Yep.
And so our approach has always been, you know, if we want to get something to market, if you want to get market support for Microsoft, mm-hmm. go to the engineers, with the engineers. Mm-hmm. So they can talk apples and apples and oranges and oranges. Mm-hmm. And once that approval, once that concept and understanding is done, then we filter up to their marketing group. Okay. And their marketing group always looks to their engineers for validation anyways.
Certainly. But I mean, you know, let's talk about what, this is slightly off topic, but it's still an interesting topic, and that is the role of marketing in a company. So you're a company of 20 people. Mm-hmm. You have marketing people there. I mean, you're a CTO. You must have a little bit of marketing in your, but you're not good at it probably because you're, let's talk about that.
Sure, sure. We're kind of unique in the sense that we actually don't even have a marketing person at the company. We have no marketing. We have no salesperson. We're 17-person company of engineers. Actually, we're almost 20 now, but so we're 20 people, about 80-90% engineer. We have one person who is kind of the receptionist, HR, secretary, executive assistant, and the garbage person.
Man, amazing.
So myself, my other two partners, we have three partners. Mm-hmm. The other two partners, one's the CEO and the other one's the CEO, I'm the CTO. Mm-hmm. And we all do the marketing, the sales, the technology bit. There are times when the CEO and I, we've gone into meetings and we just switch roles. Hey, you be the technical guy today and I'll be the sales guy.
Okay.
And they know, that's they cool. will know the difference because we can play either side, and that's very important for any executive. I mean, even going beyond just our small company, the ability to cross the different boundaries is very essential because you never know who you're gonna talk to at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be the marketing director or the GM, or it could be the head architect for a division. Mm-hmm. And being able to talk apples and apples is very important.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, to me, in this industry, you probably want to have a combination of two. I mean, a successful senior executive in the software industry would be somebody who's technical,
yep.
and also gets the market trends and industry and business.
Exactly.
We sort of have that at Microsoft, clearly. I mean, Bill is an incredible engineer, but he's also an incredible businessman.
Oh, yeah.
So we're lucky.
I think Bill's more of an incredible businessman. I mean, he's an incredible engineer to begin with, but
yeah.
to build a company like this, you have to be an incredible businessman first.
That's true. And then there's Ballmer, who's a smart guy.
Yeah, excellent.
But he's more business side,
yes.
right? Marketing. Yeah. Very cool. So this MSPC, Microsoft Solution, let's talk a little bit. What do you guys do there? It sounds like a party for partners.
Well, yeah, we party every day.
So what's going on in this place? How do you get there?
So there's a couple of things. One is they do evaluate to make sure that partners are aligned with Microsoft before you go in there. I'm actually on the advisory council for the MPSC.
Okay, so you know the answer to that question.
Yes.
All right.
So one of the things we want to it's not an office rental place for Microsoft partner wannabes. You have to have a clearly defined goal of what you want to get out of Microsoft and the partnership within Microsoft. Mm-hmm. You have to have executive buy-in. And obviously, you have to be a non-hostile, meaning you have to want to do something in the Microsoft ecosystem. And then on top of that, the other partners in the MPSC look for the ability for when a partner comes in to partner with them. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually a group of partners, all different sizes, obviously 20-person company all the way to the Hitachis and Citrix and of the world that that are there. And the end goal is to actually, as the name states, it's the Microsoft Partner Solution Center. Mm. The goal is to actually create solutions that will be hosted inside that data center in Building 25. And then a company would bring in their customers and say, hey, look how well we're partnered with Microsoft. We're actually integrated our solutions in with the other Microsoft technologies, and we're now demonstrating it in this large data center.
Hmm.
And the neat thing is the other partners joining together can actually create solutions together on top of Microsoft partner technologies and show that to their prospective customers. And so it becomes a party.
Yeah.
But the party happens when you create solutions and you can demonstrate that to your customer.
Absolutely. Now, of course, in the process of creating solutions on top of our platform to solve some problem, typically, maybe, I don't know if typically is the right word, but perhaps sometimes you're going to find bugs. You're going to find problems in architecture.
Bugs?
Yeah.
Come on.
So you get, you just, you call the product team and say, hey, come here and check this out.
Yeah. They, you know what, the product teams love to hear directly about problems and issues, especially if it's valid and relevant. And I know when I was an engineer, I loved going out to the field and seeing the products or technologies that I've created, you know, being used by the end user.
Sure.
And there's a lot of folks that come in, and actually at the MPSC, we have what's called a lunch and learn. Every other week, there's a company that that's a partner at the MPSC that will actually host a lunch and learn and invite it to all the Microsoft product groups to come and be able to demonstrate, here's all the technology and solutions we're doing. And then also for the solutions that we've created, it's open to the Microsoft field and engineers and product groups to come in and say, oh, I didn't know these products work together like this. And then they can ask questions like, what didn't work? What did work? You know, what else can we do to actually improve our product to help you integrate better?
Cool.
So that really helps both ways.
Good. And are you finding that the product teams actually listen?
Some more than others, but yes.
Okay.
I mean, you know.
So again, who are the ones that listen more than others?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm going to be on the blacklist.
Okay. We won't do that then.
No. That's, you know what? Everybody listens. It's it's all a matter of priorities. Mm-hmm. Right? If you go to a product team that's, you know, on the cusp of a launch of a new version, they're not going to have the bandwidth and the time.
Sure.
So it's really depending on when you approach them, who you approach, and also, whether you have a reputation, like if I'm the marketing guy and I keep banging on the product group's door, they're not going to answer your call.
Okay.
If I'm the technical guy, or at least the technical lead or the CTO or whoever else that can really talk intelligently, right, and not waste your time, they're going to answer. Almost every product group I've called on has gotten back to me and talked to me in a set of meetings because they know, hey, at least they're going to know, he's going to know what he's talking about. He's a mucky-muck engineer.
Totally.
Right? So that, you know, you're not going to want to talk to somebody who's going to waste your time. That's just human nature.
Sure. Now, one of the things I like to ask in this series also is, like, give us some feedback, some honest feedback about what you'd like to see that could be different in your relationship with Microsoft.
Wow.
It's a hard question. But
it's a hard question because
this is honest and open forum.
Yep. One of the things that we've been really good at is navigating the Microsoft waters.
And, the ocean, Microsoft? The
Microsoft ocean. Actually, there's product groups that come to me and ask me for contact points in other product groups. And having said that, I also know how difficult it is to find out what's... I mean, it's just Microsoft's huge. It's not a company. It's a huge... circles of product groups and technologies that are happening constantly. And even if you have a contact into one product group, you have no idea what they're doing in the other areas. And so the biggest problem with working within Microsoft is actually finding out all the things that are going on. And no one's going to call you and say, hey, Danny, by the way, there's 50 new things that are going on at Microsoft that you'd be interested in. You almost have to go out and really find out for yourself. You have to kind of keep in touch with these folks and other folks and bang on people's doors and say, a lot of times, I'd say about 70% of my conversation at Microsoft and the business that we've done, I've done over coffee in the hallway. And here's, I'll give you one tip of one thing that I do at Microsoft that has almost been the key to our success is, and now they'll stop hanging around this, but when I want to meet with a product group that I haven't met with, I hang out at the lunchroom of the building, of the product group, and I then introduce myself to that person.
Excellent.
And that's the only way sometimes that I've been able to get in front of the folks. And then once I, you know, say, hey, here's a value proposition, is this something of interest to you? If they say no, then I'm on to the next thing. So the difficulty is just the sheer amount of things that are going on for any partner to try to disseminate and organize and whatnot is very difficult to do. I mean, there's a lot of things that help. Because we're the global ISV, we have a partner manager assigned to us. And they've been great at, here's the top priorities of Microsoft and some things you might be interested in doing. And I know there's partner alliance folks and whatnot at different levels that help. But again, you just need more help with that because there's just so many things going on.
So is the information that you can gather technical enough for you? from these ISV partner types?
From the...
From your ISV partner managers. I don't really know how that works.
Yeah, yeah. So. There's actually the ISV partner managers at the global ISV level, they have two people. One is the marketing business BDM, business development manager, and then there's the technical manager.
Cool.
So they have actually two disciplines. So yeah, I meet with a business person to tell me what are the top line things that Microsoft cares about, and then maybe with the technical folks to say what are the top line technologies you guys are releasing.
Excellent.
And that helps tremendously.
So it seems like the Microsoft Partner Solutions Center could be a good place to have high level overviews of, you know, have people come in from various teams and go, you know, here's what we're doing across the company. Here's what software plus services means.
Exactly.
Here's what you guys need to start thinking about. Clearly, you can plug into software plus services.
Yep.
Pretty much everyone can.
Yep.
But that certainly would be an interesting use of that,
would be.
Facility.
Yep. And actually, at the MPSC, we're planning to have what's called a partner day, where we'll set up a one full day of just demos going through by every partner in the MPSC. And then we'll just invite all the product managers. And one day they can learn about, you know, 60 different partners.
Outstanding. Well, we'll have to send Channel 9 over there to take some of this
That'd
footage
be awesome.
Of that. Great. Well, hey, it's been great talking to you.
Thank you, Chuck.
And good luck, and keep filling those holes.
Thanks.
Right on.